The views expressed in this program are those of the participants.
Surprise.
What are you... I thought we were meeting at the restaurant.
I know, but this is so much more romantic. You, me, some oysters.
Oh, wow, you got oysters in there?
To get us in the mood. Also, some chocolate-covered strawberries. You know, ever since I saw you on that red carpet, that face of yours, I have been waiting to do this.
Okay. Let's talk about this for a second. What have you been waiting
for? Ow! Whoa, get back. Whoa!
Look, I tried everything to get away. I hid under the counter. I was hiding in the bathroom. At one point, I tried to pull a Kate Fear up under the piano.
Yet when I walked in, she was straddling you on the couch.
Right? She's like the Terminator of sex bombs.
What is that even supposed to mean? She just keeps on coming?
Welcome, everyone. It is Thursday, May 18th, 2023. I'm Bob Metz. And this is Just Right, broadcasting around the world and online. Join us for an hour of discussion that's not right-wing, it's just right.
Fade into color, and color into black and white. Under the bedclothes, everything will be alright.
To follow through with our opener's query, what just keeps on coming... are all of the female accusers claiming to have been sexually assaulted or raped by a male at some unspecified time in the distant past, followed by the truth eventually surfacing that it is they who are doing the real raping with their false and criminally liable accusations? Where there are celebrities with fortunes to capture, there will always be a lineup of gold diggers who make those celebrities their sexual fantasy road to riches and fame. And if you think that that is a sexist comment, then you're not focused on the true nature of the inequity and criminality with which we are faced. Which is sexist, but not in the way most people would use that term. And the most recent evidence of this, of course, concerns the outlandish narrative concocted by the clearly delusional E. Jean Carroll, who accused Trump of raping her on some unspecified date and time during some estimated decade in the past. As bizarre and surreal as her story and the court's decision regarding her story is, it is but the tip of a gigantic iceberg of criminality that no one else, to my knowledge, has yet identified, despite discussing and debating its symptoms. It's kind of like not being able to see the forest for the trees. So you'll hear it here first. Get ready to see the forest, because we're going to connect some dots today that no one else has, right after our encouraging you to write us at feedback@justrightmedia.org. Hear us on WBCQ and on Channel 292 Shortwave. Follow and like us on your favorite podcast platform and visit us at justrightmedia.org, where you can access all of our social media links, archive broadcasts, and the support button that makes it easy for you to support the show. Because as always, your financial support is appreciated and is what makes this show possible.
This woman, I don't know her. I never met her. I have no idea who she is. I had a picture taken years ago with her and her husband, nice guy, John Johnson. He was a newscaster, very nice man. She called him an ape. Happens to be African-American. Called him an ape. The judge wouldn't allow us to put that in. Her dog or her cat was named Vagina. The judge wouldn't allow to put that in. All of these things. But with her, they could put in anything. Access,
this
Hollywood,
this was a jury of nine people who found
right.
you liable of sexual abuse. Do you think that will deter women from voting for you?
No, I don't think so, because I think the whole thing, just so you understand, ready? I never met this woman. I never saw this woman. This woman said, I met her at the front door of Bergdorf Goodman, which I rarely go into other than for a couple of charities. I met her in the front door. She was about 60 years old then. This is like 22, 23 years ago. I met her in the front door of Bergdorf Goodman. I was immediately attracted to her, and she was immediately attracted to me. And we had this great chemistry. We're walking into a crowded department store. We had this great chemistry. And a few minutes later, we end up in a room, a dressing room, of Bergdorf Goodman, right near the cash register. And then she found out there are locks on the door. So she said, I found one that was open. She found one. She learned this at trial. She found one that was open. What kind of a woman meets somebody and brings them up, and within minutes, you're playing hanky-panky in a dressing room, okay?
The real question is, what kind of woman would fabricate such an outlandish and unbelievably perverse narrative and then go public with it? Can you possibly imagine any other conservative politician respond to accusations of sexual abuse and whatever else straight on with humor and ridicule like Donald Trump does? Put any other conservative in Trump's place and they would be cowering and retreating and reacting to accusations defensively. But Trump managed to turn the whole affair, that he never had, into a comedy of errors. What has happened to Trump over the past few weeks has reopened the door to an ongoing travesty of justice that I've held on the back burner for almost 2 years now, but which comprised perhaps the most accumulated commentary we have ever broadcast on a single subject or issue on Just Right, namely, the trials of Bill Cosby. And I can speak with some authority on this subject, since his story and plight may be the only topic I've ever discussed on this show where I would consider myself an investigative journalist, not merely a reporter or commentator on the case. I spent literally hundreds of hours investigating the dozens of women who were accusing Cosby of sexual abuse and shared that information with our listeners over the span of no fewer than 16 separate broadcasts of Just Right, with today's show adding yet another to that list. The parallels between what happened to Cosby and Trump are astounding and are no coincidence, but are the consequence of a deeply corrupt judicial system corrupted by leftist ideologies, and therein lies a greater danger to the rest of us. And let me state from the outset that I remain utterly and firmly convinced that Bill Cosby was the victim of a great injustice, and that Donald Trump is also being unjustly raped before the courts of law and the court of public opinion. So before bringing the Cosby situation into our big picture, let's first kick off all of the sexualized madness with this May 11th presentation by David Freiheit of Viva Fry, who explains why he has arrived at the conclusion that the Jean Carroll versus Donald Trump jury verdict is a travesty of justice.
Viva Fry, former Montreal litigator turned rumbler, and yes, I'm sure everyone on earth has heard the news of the day, the news of the week, the news that has left the left in orgiastic ecstasy. Donald John Trump was found by a jury to be liable for sexual battery and defamation in a lawsuit filed by one Jean Carroll, E. Jean Carroll, against Donald Trump, resulting from alleged events that allegedly occurred sometime in the 90s. E. Jean Carroll didn't really have any dates specified in her memory. Carroll sued Trump civilly for rape and for defamation resulting from Donald Trump denying the rape had occurred, calling her a con job, all sorts of names. She sued for rape and for defamation, despite the statute of limitations having been long exceeded as relates for any potential criminal claim. And there was some attenuating circumstances of some legislation that expanded the statute of limitations for civil claims. And she had a 1 year window of opportunity to file a civil claim. And she exercised that right to avail herself of that extension. She sued Donald Trump in New York. She had a trial. For anyone who had watched the trial, you would be equally outraged by this jury finding, unless you're a partisan hack, and there seem to be a lot of partisan hacks all over social media. But the verdict came down yesterday. The jury rendered a finding of liability, not on the rape and defamation, because the jury did not believe Carroll's story as relates to the alleged rape. They found Donald Trump liable for sexual assault, sexual battery, the lesser version of rape, and the defamation resulting from his denial of the event and calling Carroll all sorts of names, a con artist trying to sell her book in which she detailed these events. For those of you who might be unfamiliar with Carroll's story, I'm going to play you a clip from an interview that she gave on CNN almost 4 years ago with Anderson Cooper. If you haven't seen this interview, you might find it a little shocking. If you have seen this interview, you might find it a little shocking that a certain portion of this interview, in which Carol looked like nothing less than an absolute crazy person, had been edited out from the version that CNN and Anderson Cooper put on YouTube. Because if you go watch the interview on YouTube, you're going to find a certain portion of it is acutely missing. And I'll start with the portion that is acutely missing from what you might see on YouTube today.
You don't feel like a victim.
I was not thrown on the ground and ravished. Which, the word rape carries so many sexual connotations. This was not sexual. It hurt.
But I think most people think of rape it is a violent assault. It is not.
I think most people think of rape as being sexy. Mm.
What?
Let's take a short break.
Think of the fantasies. Mm.
Let's take a break.
We're going to take a quick break.
Yeah, cut it.
If you can stick around, we'll talk more on the other side.
You're fascinating to talk to.
Cut it.
That is the portion of the interview that you will find acutely, oddly, conveniently missing from Anderson Cooper's interview that is currently on YouTube on CNN's channel. But I'll play you a portion from the interview that is still on YouTube so you can get the details of this story as it happened in the mind of Carol.
And so we went up the escalator. We went to the lingerie department. It was empty. There was nobody there. There was nobody on the whole floor, frankly. I think you go through bathing suits and cruise wear, and the store was not popular at the time. Nobody was there on the counter.
That's going to sound strange, people, that nobody was in the store.
Because Bergdorf's is the greatest store on the earth. They take care of whatever you want there. Mm-hmm. If you're thirsty, they'll bring you water. They'll get you whatever. They'll call all over the country to get whatever you want. It was a moment in time. Nobody was there. Plus, a dressing room door was open, which is very unusual because usually they're locked and the attendant comes and locks it, escorts you in, etc. Okay.
So as you can see from the version of events as detailed by Carol during the CNN interview, according to her, she was leaving the Bergdorf, some fancy store in New York, while Donald John Trump was entering the Bergdorf. He said, "Hey, I recognize you." She said, "I recognize you." Don Trump said, "I need to get a gift for a woman. Will you help me?" And she was ecstatic. She's like, "Yeah, sure. I'll show you around." They walked around the Bergdorf. Apparently, Donald Trump was unnoticed, despite being a billionaire tycoon in one of the fanciest stores in the world. They were in this store walking around, and although this store is usually very busy, as magic would have it, the floor that they were on, which they got to magically unnoticed without any security guards for Donald Trump, without any store clerks jumping on Donald Trump to get him to buy the most, the fanciest, the most expensive stuff there, they magically walked through this store unnoticed. They get to a floor where magically there's no one there. On this floor where magically there's no one there, there happened to be magically a changing room that was magically unlocked because typically, as she said during her interview, those doors are typically locked. Someone comes in with a key and lets you. The door was unlocked. Donald Trump went in there with her, forced himself upon her, and allegedly raped her. And she used the word raped her in the interview with Anderson Cooper.
You're saying there was actual penetration?
Yes.
Did you, which is, puts it into a different category of any of the other women who have come forward. That is the definition of rape. One definition.
That's the definition. Yes.
The event occurred. She allegedly hit her head so hard that one of her friends, who she called afterwards, was concerned about her health, but she hit her head. No police report filed, no medical report, no nothing. She then allegedly calls her friend afterwards, tells her friend what happened. Her friend says, it sounds like you were just raped and you might have hit your head and you might need medical attention. And apparently Carol said, no, don't call the cops, don't call the police, nothing, and let us never speak of this again. And they never spoke of it again until 2016. What happened in 2016? I'll let your imagination run wild. The thing sounds as fantastical as it sounds. The only thing more absurd than the story as described by Carol on CNN to Anderson Cooper is that a jury unanimously found Donald Trump liable for the events. Actually, I should say the alleged events, but now, technically speaking, in law, these events are legal facts. Donald Trump is legally liable for the events and for the defamation that ensued. But if this dearth of evidence does not shock the conscience given the jury finding, I should add that there was, in fact, other evidence adduced, and that was evidence of character of Donald Trump, because they had two other people, two other women come in and say how Donald Trump allegedly assaulted them as well at some point in the past. One of them alleges that Donald Trump assaulted her on an airplane in the 70s when she was invited into first class by Donald Trump, and she took the last remaining open seat in first class, and Donald Trump jumped all over her very aggressively, as though he had 40 zillion hands, apparently. And he assaulted her in first class on an airplane, and nobody saw anything, nobody said anything, and she also said nothing for decades. And what is the connection between these allegations that allegedly occurred in the 70s and Carroll's lawsuit? None at all, except to prove some form of character of Donald Trump, that this is his modus operandi. This is what he does. This is what he's done to other women. Except these other women did not go to the police either, did not file criminal complaints, did not file civil complaints. There was no adjudication on these allegations in and of themselves. And yet somehow there was a mini trial within a trial bringing in these witnesses who were testifying on untested, unconfirmed allegations as though they were fact, as though they were provable fact, to determine this is how Donald Trump operates. And it works so well that you have some lawyers like the David A. Frenches of this world who said, oh my goodness, they brought in these other witnesses who confirmed that Donald Trump also assaulted them, failing to distinguish between allegations of assault and actual evidence of assault. Another witness also testified as to Donald Trump's alleged modus operandi, alleging that he also aggressively accosted her at some point. She also said nothing about it. They call in these two witnesses to testify on their own experience that had not been the object of any civil or criminal complaint, any objective finding. They brought them in. This evidence should never have been brought in, because when you talk about evidence having more prejudicial value than probative value, this is exactly what they mean. Bringing in these two witnesses to testify about what allegedly happened to them decades earlier was nothing more than having an unsubstantiated trial within a trial in an attempt to substantiate the allegations in this trial. Totally inappropriate, but my goodness, the damage is done. Even if there is somehow some form of successful appeal to this, nothing will change the headlines that many people are running with today, and those headlines are confounding civil liability with criminal wrongdoing.
Talk about a completely incoherent narrative from E. Jean Carroll. E. Jean Carroll is clearly conflating fantasy with reality, one of the classic symptoms of a troubled mind. Think of the fantasies, she says. I think most people think of rape as being sexy. Well, in the context of a sexual fantasy, that's a valid statement. But she's accusing Donald Trump of a real crime. Is that her real fantasy? And how does she reconcile her statement that I was not thrown on the ground and ravaged, this was not sexual, with there was actual penetration, that is the definition of rape? Now, I know how feminists used to argue that distinction. They would say that rape is an act of violence and not an act of sex, which is an ironic distinction given our own experience on this show. Just a few days ago, Robert Vaughn reminded me of how, when we were broadcasting live from CHRW FM radio in London, they censored and bleeped out Robert's use of the word rape in the context of the Roman Empire raping and pillaging the land, or in the context of being raped by taxation. All uses of the word rape, according to station policy, we later learned, must be taken in a sexual context and never applied in the larger established generic definition of that word, as in, quote, to carry off by force, end quote. The only thing more absurd than Carroll's story to Cooper is that the jury unanimously found Trump liable for the event, says David Freiheit. Well, that pretty much summarizes what you could say about any of the bizarre and utterly fictional narratives about everything we've been hearing from climate change to COVID. In a way, that absurdity speaks to the phenomenon of mass formation and individual hypnosis that Robert Vaughn and I discussed a couple weeks ago. And in this context, the real incredulous thing about all of this rape BS is not so much the mentally ill themselves, but those who go along with their obviously nutty narratives. It didn't take me long, after hearing some of the details about the court case against Trump, to notice that for me, this was deja vu all over again. particularly upon learning how other so-called character witnesses, who said nothing about what they supposedly witnessed for decades, were being called into the proceedings, and in seeing how an obviously deranged woman with an obviously contrived fictional story was permitted to enter a courtroom with a charge of rape against a famous celebrity. Does this remind you of anyone else? It sure did me, and that was Bill Cosby. Remember something called the rape culture? That was one of the labels being used by feminists and other leftists intent on blaming toxic masculinity for all things non-feminist, a toxicity that has now apparently cured itself in transgendered men pretending to be women. Now we have toxic trans. Under today's philosophy of the left, the term rape culture takes on a new and very real meaning. It now refers to an open season for a gender that shall never be allowed to be mentioned, as in what is a woman, to accuse another unmentionable gender, as in a man, of rape. And by bending the definition of rape into a political weapon of the left, where it can mean whatever the hell they want it to mean. And just think about it. On a broader level, sex has become one of the left's major tools of political manipulation and intimidation. From the transgender movements to the whole controversy about the Epstein exploitation of underage girls and extortion, to human trafficking, to pronoun offensiveness, to you name it, sex sells, and anyone accused of sexual impropriety recoils in a defensive posture. Everyone, that is, except for people like Donald Trump, of course, and people like Bill Cosby, who has almost become a forgotten victim of the new rape culture. And that's why we're going to remind you about his story right now. Up next, two different presentations on the Cosby situation, both from July 1st, 2021, that's almost 2 years ago, on this side of the bumper by The Rageaholic, and on the return side by Viva Fry in conversation with Robert Barnes.
Now, I've meant to make a Cosby case video for at least the last 2 years. And let's just say this at the outset. Everyone is entitled to a fair and impartial hearing. While I will always assume innocence without adequate proof, having never been among the women in proximity to Cosby during the alleged events, I can never really know for a mortal certainty whether the events occurred or didn't. Although, as you'll see, some of the Cosby allegations were later proven irrefutably in court to be rank fabrications. What I do know is that Bill Cosby didn't receive a fair trial because, as I've learned from the West Memphis 3 or the more recent railroading of John Schaefer for the insurrectionist activity of pointing a finger, there but for the grace of God, go you! If one of the wealthiest men in the world, a fixture in American homes who damn near bought NBC with pocket change, could get reamed by a runaway judiciary spurred by media-manufactured Me Too hysteria, what chance do you think you have? And folks, believe me when I say Cosby couldn't have been railroaded any harder if John Henry had prosecuted his ass in a courtroom caboose with a drunken Amtrak conductor presiding. But let's head off the obvious idiotic rejoinder making the rounds on anti-social media before we peel this onion, though, shall we? He wasn't proven innocent. He was only released on a technicality. So long as you don't count the first trial, which was so utterly incriminating and conclusive, the jury wound up more hung than Ron Jeremy. Yet in spite of obvious exculpatory evidence and an evidently tainted jury pool, the retrial went ahead, and this time, friends, the fix was well in. What's the technicality they claim tipped the entire apple cart exactly? Well, after Hannibal Buress's cancerously unfunny ass proffered his Bill Cosby is a racist remarks in a comedy special, touching off the initial dogpile of Pavlovian payola seekers, the original district attorney in the case investigated the first accuser's claims outright and thoroughly, and found them without merit.
The first trial, the woman that they allowed to testify, it was based on a time frame, and apparently it went back, I believe, like to 1996, but when she testified, it reverted back to actually 1990 was the date. And then in the second trial, for whatever reason, he just went back to 1982.
Well, the judge allowed women to come in to say they'd been improperly treated by Mr. Cosby, allegations that are, you know, going back 30 years.
Right.
Allegations that were never made at the time, that were never, in my opinion, properly investigated. And suddenly you're cluttering the trial with these accusers.
Disproved the claims! Outright think the broad who claimed just in time for the 2016 election that Donald Trump had groped her in coach class on a flight on the wrong airline that there's no evidence Trump ever took. Why is this fact pertinent? Because Cosby's innocence was so persuasive to the DA, he formally declared he would not prosecute, and he had to do this before Cosby would agree to record a video deposition. Yes, folks, it was that deposition. The video everyone says proves Cosby's guilt because he admitted to giving women drugs in the 70s when lewds and Spanish Fly were voluntary party drugs, the entire context of which was never once explained to the court case that wasn't legally allowed to happen when they screened the deposition that was illegally admitted into evidence. If you consider two simultaneous constitutional rights violations preceded by a DA finding no compelling case to even prosecute to be a technicality, he was released on a technicality. So what happened? Simple. Me Too happened, or rather, the prototypical strains of what would ultimately metastasize into Me Too, and the incumbent activist politics therein, might I add. Now, throughout the trial and its Weimar German sequel, Cosby was often depicted in the press as quiet, evasive, withdrawn, as if he was ashamed or had something to hide, in some way uncertain. The implicit suggestion being that it was some kind of indicator of his underlying guilt. In truth, so committed was Cosby to his unflagging innocence, he was offered and rejected a plea to a lesser misdemeanor charge, sans jail time, that would have effectively swept the entire sad episode under the rug entirely. He turned it down just to maintain his innocence. Name one muckraking journalist that reported this fact in the press, let alone weighted their hyperventilative coverage with it.
Well, this is the thing now. So people are saying in the chat that, you know, Razor Fist was right again. Yeah. And I guess in a way he was. The bottom line is that Cosby nonetheless made prejudicial admissions in those depositions, ones that could lead people to conclude he was guilty of something, although may never be able to be prosecuted because of what had happened. So you have these two conflicting moral and legal principles. Like, one is he made prejudicial admissions which lead people to conclude as to guilt, but this entire prosecution itself is tainted because, but for the fact that they duped him into making those admissions, apparently Castor had said at the time, The only way to prosecute him is to get him to admit to the crime because of the issues with the prosecution, the stories, the timeline, the behavior of the alleged victim. So you have the DA you have the DA saying the only way to prosecute him is to get him to admit to the crime, which is never going to happen under the normal circumstances. And then you basically dupe him, trick him into admitting to it to prosecute him. But you're going to have a lot of people who are going to say he admitted to it anyhow. He's scum of the earth, so prosecute him. It doesn't matter if the process is totally tainted. To which you will respond what?
Two things. One is he didn't admit to assaulting this individual. And what he admitted to was basically using certain drugs. And it was not clear that he believed what he was doing was illegal. So you can argue about that. The second reason people came to believe he was guilty was the large number of his accusers. But all of those accusations were outside the statute of limitations. And so it was one of those, and it's hard to say. I mean, the numbers don't always add up because a lot of people fabricated allegations against Donald Trump, in my view. I have no doubt about that. But I have doubts about Bill Cosby's moral innocence, but I have no doubts about his legal innocence, given that his constitutional rights were clearly eviscerated in this process.
So, yes. So some people might think, God, Cosby is morally culpable and maybe even legally culpable of something, but this is not how any properly functioning criminal system works, where you say, we can't get him in the absence of an admission. How can we get an admission? Tell him we're not going to prosecute him so that civilly he no longer needs to invoke the Fifth. And then when he makes admission civilly, in comes a changing of the guard. We're going to prosecute him and use that against him. That's exactly what these constitutional rights were intended to protect against.
Protects everybody else. He was not constitutionally culpable. You also do have to ask yourself, how strong was the evidence in this case that they had to violate his constitutional rights to try to secure a conviction. So I'm always skeptical of how much the evidence in this particular case of this particular accusation are true when you got to break the rules to try to win.
Oh, and there was something else that I learned only in looking into it, is that the first trial was a hung jury, and then the second trial was about to be a hung jury when the judge allows certain evidence that apparently swayed the jury in one direction. Can you elaborate on that for the crowd?
In essence, if there was, well, there was a bunch of rulings that were in question, but the bottom line was the judge kept forcing the jury to come back with a guilty verdict and would make selective rulings on evidence, selective rulings on instructions, selective rulings on even all the way back to the jury selection process that was designed to secure a conviction.
You're listening to Just Right, broadcasting around the world and online. And what you just heard from both the Rageaholic and from Viva Fry and Barnes is only a superficial account of the Cosby case, especially when you understand the full context of the Cosby situation. To their credit, they got it just right when it came to all of the legal machinations and legal criminalities that were going on. But they have severely underestimated the pure evil behind every one of Cosby's accusers, which numbered around 5 dozen or so from what I last heard. Now, the Rageaholic said he always likes to assume innocence, but can never really know with certainty, while Robert Barnes said, "I have doubts about Cosby's moral innocence, but am confident of his legal innocence." Well, I can be certain, and this show may be the only one that has ever addressed Cosby's moral innocence, of which I am also confident. There's obviously a lot they don't know or have not said about the bigger picture behind the persecution of Bill Cosby, which was being done for the same reasons as the persecution of Donald Trump. Are you ready for this? Cosby was targeted because he was an outspoken conservative. And that's exactly what we were saying years ago. I'm not aware of any other blogger or reporter who delved into the Cosby rape allegations more than I. Coincidentally, Cosby was actually performing in London, Ontario when the whole hashtag MeToo fascist feminist movement was in full gear, and we were countering the local feminists who were all demanding that every woman must be believed who accuses someone of rape. Well, in my own investigation of Cosby's accusers, I couldn't find a single one that was even close to being believable. They were pretty much all versions of E. Jean Carroll, Trump's current wacko accuser. As I said during the opening of today's show, there is so much detail and insight to the Cosby case that it took us at least 16 broadcasts to expose just the basics. So naturally, the time we have in today's broadcast couldn't possibly address all of the misinformation floating around about this incredible miscarriage of justice. But here are just a few of the key clarifications that need to be made. I arrived at all my conclusions regarding Cosby's accusers solely from their own testimonies and criminal records. Yeah, that's right, criminal records. And after going through literally dozens of accusers, I could not find a single case that was credible, and most were so incredible as to defy all reason, especially since they were taken seriously by Cosby's enemies. Cosby admitted to giving drugs in his deposition, says Barnes. Well, this is completely out of context. In fact, Cosby did not drink, and he never used drugs himself, and he did not quote-unquote give drugs to people any more than he quote-unquote gave alcohol to people, as if he were somehow administering these things. But when he had a party entertaining guests, he always supplied the popular legal drug of the day along with alcohol, neither of which he himself partook of. Even his accusers confirm this. Whatever drugs or alcohol his guests took, they took voluntarily and of their own accord. Most importantly, Cosby's character, again, as described even by his accusers, was an honorable one. So much so, in fact, that as the Rageaholic pointed out, he refused to admit any guilt to any so-called lesser offense which he knew he did not commit. Cosby was a victim of the woke culture, although they weren't calling it that back then. He never really came to understand why he was being so attacked. And as I commented during our coverage of these events, Cosby needed a philosopher, not a lawyer. The big legal push at the time was to move the administration of justice from the legal courts to the court of public opinion, where BS and mischief reigned supreme. Obviously, they were successful. From COVID to climate change to gender dysfunctions to sexual accusations of rape, nobody cares about the legalities or the morality of the facts. Just the public's perception matters, a perception which throughout history has been mostly fiction and rarely fact. On our August 3rd, 2017 broadcast, Just Right number 516, titled The Intentional Omissions of Truth, we posted the following blog observation, and I quote, "What do Bill Cosby and Donald Trump have in common? More than you might think. One thing they have in common is the way in which the establishment media has been delivering the narrative on each of these two individuals' ongoing public stories. The other thing they have in common is that both Trump and Cosby are under attack by the political left, which is the primary source of their problems. Regrettably, many members of the left can be found in Republican circles, as Trump learned when Republican Senator John McCain voted against Trump's plan to repeal and replace Obamacare. Similarly, in the wake of this past June's Bill Cosby hung jury trial, we felt it only fitting that some little-known facts, context, and circumstances about this very political story should be brought again to the attention of everyone. Following the trial, Mrs. Camille Cosby hit the nail right on the head when she issued a statement summarizing much of what we have already illustrated and documented on past broadcasts of Just Right. How do I describe the district attorney? Heinously and exploitatively ambitious. How do I describe the judge? Overtly arrogant and collaborating with the district attorney. How do I describe the counsels for the accusers? Totally unethical. How do I describe many, but not all, of the general media? Blatantly vicious entities that continually disseminated intentional omissions of truth for the primary purpose of greedily selling sensationalism at the expense of a human life. Historically, people have challenged injustices. I am grateful to any of the jurors who tenaciously fought to review the evidence, which is the rightful way to make a sound decision. Ultimately, that is a manifestation of justice based on fact, not lies. As a very special friend once stated, truth can be subdued, but not destroyed." End quote. And from all the facts we ourselves investigated, Camille Cosby was just right. And a quick review of some of the Cosby-related themes we discussed on our many prior episodes were the following. Bill Cosby, the two courts. Bill Cosby, fact check. Bill Cosby versus the tabloid press. Bill Cosby's shady accusers. Consent versus affirmative consent. Still because, the immoral of the story. Feminism's cause is feminism's cause, with, of course, cause being spelled two different ways there. Bill Cosby, allegation invalidations. Courting the public court. Bill Cosby and the corruption of justice. Parallels. Cosby and Gomeshi. Oh my God, I forgot all about that one. Feminism, the uncivilizing force. And the court of gender bias. Just a handful of the issues we were talking about back then. And the quickest way to access all of these broadcasts is by going to our August 3rd 2017 broadcast, where at the bottom of that show's post is a bonus audio link with a pre-sorted list and links to all of our previous broadcasts detailing this incredible miscarriage of justice against Cosby for political objectives. And once you become aware of even a few of these outrageous incidents concerning the allegations made against Cosby, you'll certainly come to understand in a much deeper sense what Donald Trump is currently dealing with. And on that note, it would be remiss of us if we didn't at least mention and react to the incredible performance given by Donald Trump on CNN last week. So here we go with a few highlights on this side of our upcoming bumper, along with a few mixed reactions from various sources on the return side.
If you look at what's gone to our country has gone to hell. Our borders are bad. Our military has been bad. You look at the taxes, you look at inflation, what's happened to inflation, it's just destroying our country. We've really become, in many ways, a third world country. One of the big problems was that Nancy Pelosi, Crazy Nancy, as I affectionately call her, Crazy Nancy Pelosi and the mayor of Washington were in charge, as you know, of security. And they
They're
did not do their job.
They're not in charge of the National Guard. You're in charge of the National
Guard.
Well,
I offered them National Guard. I said, we'll give you soldiers, we'll give you National Guard, we'll give you whatever you want. And they turned me down.
You're
and in fact,
Defense
she turned
Secretary.
Me down. She turned me down in writing.
Here's in that 3 hours, over 140 officers were injured that day.
And a person named Ashley Babbitt was killed.
Yes.
You know what? She was killed, and she shouldn't have been killed. And that thug that killed her, there was no reason to shoot her. At blank range, cold blank range, they shot her. And she was a good person. She was a patriot.
One
there
person
was no
who
reason
was there.
There was no reason. And he went on television to brag about the fact that he killed her.
That the officer was not bragging about the fact that he killed
he
her. But
bragging.
One person.
Will you pardon the January 6th rioters who were convicted of federal offenses?
I am inclined to pardon many of them. I can't say for every single one, because a couple of them, probably they got out of control. But, you know, when you look at Antifa, what they've done to Portland, and if you look at Antifa, look at what they've done to Minneapolis and so many other places. Look at what they did to Seattle and BLM. Many people were killed. These people, I'm not trying to justify anything, but you have two standards of justice in this country. And what they've done, and I love that question, because what they've done to so many people is nothing, nothing. And then what they've done to these people, they've persecuted these people. And yeah, my answer is, I am most likely, if I get in, I will most likely, I would say it will be a large portion of them. You know, they did a very... And it'll be very early on. And they're living in hell right now.
So when it comes
they're
to
living
pardons...
in hell. And their policemen, and their firemen, and their soldiers, and their carpenters, and electricians, and they're great people. Many of them are just great people.
Does that include the four Proud Boys members who were charged and convicted of seditious conspiracy?
I don't know. I'd have to look at their case. But I will say, in Washington, D.C., you cannot get a fair trial. You cannot. Just like in New York City, you can't get a fair trial either.
What is the first thing you would do to help bring down the cost to make things more affordable?
Drill, baby, drill. When we have a debt limit, and they use that very seriously on me, they came in, Schumer came in with Nancy Pelosi, and they were using it, we'll violate it, we'll do whatever. They talked a whole lot different than they do right now. I say to the Republicans out there, congressmen, senators, if they don't give you massive cuts, you're going to have to do a default. And I don't believe they're going to do a default, because I think the Democrats will absolutely cave. Because you don't want to have that happen. But it's better than what we're doing right now, because we're spending money like drunken sailors.
So just to be clear, Mr. President, you think the U.S. should default if the White House does not agree to the spending cuts Republicans are demanding?
Well, you might as well do it now, because you'll do it later, because we have to save this country. Our country is dying. Our country is being destroyed by stupid people, by very stupid people.
You once said that using the debt ceiling as a negotiating wedge just could not happen. You said that when you were in the Oval Office.
That's when I was president.
So why is it different now that you're out of office?
Because now I'm not president. If I'm president, I will have that war settled in one day, 24 hours.
How would you settle that war in one day?
Because I'll meet with Putin, I'll meet with Zelensky. They both have weaknesses and they both have strengths. And within 24 hours, that war will be settled. It'll be over. It'll be absolutely over.
Do you
over.
Want Ukraine to win this war?
I don't think in terms of winning and losing. I think in terms of getting it settled so we stop killing all these people and breaking down this country. And you know what? If I don't win, this country is going to be in big trouble. It's so sad to see what's happening.
But no commitment there on the accepting the results regardless of the outcome.
If it's an honest election, correct, I will.
Okay, so not committing to accepting the 2024 election results or acknowledging what happened in 2020. President Trump, I want to thank you for coming here tonight. This was an important conversation with voters to hear and to have. Thank you to our audience and to our host, St. Anselm College.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Katie.
Donald Trump's attorney showed her a post on her Facebook page from 2012 in which Carol wrote, quote, "Would you have sex with Donald Trump for $17,000, even if you could A, give the money to charity, B, close your eyes, and he's not allowed to speak?" The attorney said, "You joked around about having sex with Donald Trump for money on this Facebook post, correct? And she responded, yes! This is the article where that quote comes from. They buried the lead. That should be the headline. Whack job accusing Donald Trump of attacking her. Fantasized on Facebook about doing it with him. But now it looks like Donald Trump might get sued by her again for defaming her again by calling her a whack job and denying her hallucination, her delusion during the town hall event. This was the last straw for CNN and the moment they decided to pull the town hall from the air 20 minutes or 21 minutes early. The media meltdown over Donald Trump being given a platform on CNN live Wednesday night for a town hall event continues. An event that they cut short by 20 minutes, by the way, after only 9 audience questions because, well, it wasn't going exactly as they had planned. Tell us, Mr. No Name, MSNBC morning host, what did you like best about it?
A rally, and it was which he called the moderator nasty. The crowd laughed and cheered. He called E. Jean Carroll, who we spoke to yesterday, called her a whack job. The crowd laughed and cheered. And it again shows how he has just reshaped the Republican Party in his image, the complete dominance of the party. And he was given this opportunity last night to talk to them and show again that he's in charge.
Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez says that CNN should be ashamed of themselves and noted that the audience is cheering him on and laughing at the host. Excuse me, MSNBC, would you like to tell everybody who didn't tune in what they missed?
When Donald Trump said he would pardon the people who stormed the Capitol on January 6th, the crowd applauded.
Will you pardon the January 6th rioters who were convicted of federal offenses?
Protesters.
I am inclined to pardon many of them. I would say it will be a large portion of them. You know, they did a very... And it will be very early on.
When Trump called the moderator of that town hall, a journalist standing right next to him.
No, he didn't call her a journalist. Stop lying.
When he called her a nasty person, the crowd cheered and then they laughed. Donald Trump fed off that crowd of Republican voters and the crowd fed off of him. And there was nothing that anyone could do about it.
The problem was in that format, it was a rally. It wasn't a town hall. It was full of Trump supporters. They laughed at every insult he threw out there. And he fed off that as he does, turned to the audience as an ally against her.
This clown, I think his name is Rick Wilson from the Never Trump Republican group, the Lincoln Project, couldn't even wait until the event was over to complain. So he posted this during a commercial break.
We're in a break now from the presidential town hall with CNN, Caitlin Collins, and whatever the they thought they were going to get out of this, they instead have set a match to democracy once again. You are letting an insane person stand there and make people giggle and laugh when he jokes about rape.
Now, they were actually laughing at a complete whack job and the kangaroo court system that declared Donald Trump was liable for what she hallucinated he did. Even Anderson Cooper couldn't help but laugh in her face when the network was trying to sell her story.
We've just got to take a quick break. If you can stick around, we'll talk more on the other side.
You're fascinating to talk to.
She also accuses Les Moonves, who is or was the head of CBS, of trying to do the same thing to her in an elevator.
This insanity should be pulled off the f***ing air. Chris Licht, you should be ashamed of yourself.
He's the new head of CNN, by the way.
This is astoundingly bad for the brand of CNN. It's astoundingly bad for the country. And it's astoundingly bad, honestly, folks, for every other Republican candidate in the primaries. Wrap that up. It's done. You saw this tonight. You know you can't beat him on the stage. Everybody else, oars up. Time to go to work because he's going to be the nominee. This is unbelievable. I've never seen anything like it.
You need to watch your potty mouth, sir. It's going to take me 10 minutes just to go and edit all that out. So I'm running a family-friendly show around here. As soon as they started their post-town hall coverage, which, by the way, ended 20 minutes early. It was supposed to go for an hour and a half, and it only went for an hour and 10 minutes.
He called a black law enforcement officer a thug.
The dirtbag who shot Ashley Babbitt.
Said people here in Washington, D.C., at Chinatown, don't speak English.
Many of them don't.
He attacked Caitlin as a nasty woman because she was trying to get him to answer a question.
Because she was being rude.
Perhaps most chillingly, the day after a 9-person jury of his peers in New York found him liable for sexual battery and defamation and ordered him to pay writer E. Jean Carroll $5 million.
A total scam, a fake verdict.
He made fun of her account of her sexual assault and many...
Her lies, her mental illness, her delusion.
...in the audience laughed.
and applauded.
Here he is at this town hall today. I've never met her before, and you're just in making fun of her. How did that make you feel as a woman?
I didn't really care.
Why didn't you care?
I don't know enough about the case. Women can be victims of abuse. Women can also make up stories. I mean, we see it all the time. So I don't know. All of these situations where people coming out 20, 30 years later, I don't listen to it.
Here's Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez over on MSNBC, upset about it.
I know you said earlier that you will not comment on the platforming of such atrocious disinformation, but I would. I think it was a profoundly irresponsible decision. I don't think that I would be doing my job if I did not say that. And what we saw tonight was a series of extremely irresponsible decisions that put a sexual abuse victim at risk.
A complete whack job, exposed to an audience who never really followed that ridiculous kangaroo of a case.
That put that person at risk in front of a national audience, and I could not have disagreed with it more. It was shameful.
Anderson Cooper is engaging in damage control, hoping to prevent what little audience the network has from flipping over to MSNBC.
Good evening. Before we begin with tonight's broadcast, I want to say something about what we witnessed at last night's town hall.
The best thing that CNN has aired probably ever?
Many of you have expressed deep anger and disappointment. Many of you are upset that someone who attempted to destroy our democracy was invited to sit on a stage in front of a crowd of Republican voters to answer questions.
I'm sorry, but it's your network that's trying to destroy our democracy. And we're not even a democracy. We're a constitutional republic, by the way. But of course, your viewers wouldn't know the difference.
And I get it. It was disturbing.
It was awesome.
It was disturbing to see and hear that person refer to a black law enforcement officer.
That person. You mean President Trump. Hardest hit, however, is Joe Scarborough, who hosts a morning show over on MSHIV.
What we saw was last night this virus of lies that's been loosened on the American people.
Wait for it.
And an audience, an American audience, lapping it up. This isn't Putin's Russia. This is Trump's slice of America.
Half of it.
And
half the country.
What I saw last night, at least, was as chilling as anything I've seen on television since January the 6th.
Yeah, we're looking at...
I just don't really understand why they didn't just cut him off.
What I didn't know was that the audience would be filled with his cult. I would like to know if CNN was passing out Kool-Aid before the event started.
I think it was a profoundly irresponsible decision.
There is no sense in fact-checking or replaying the highlights.
I'm sure you're going to have more fact-checks for us because there were more lies than I could count.
I think we needed a chyron. This is a lie. This is a lie. This is a lie. This is a lie.
Now listen. Oh, Lord. Here's what I'd say. I like that this is the grand experiment is alive and well. Democracy is alive and well. As long as we have this outrage on both sides and we have all this stuff, including lies, it's never been different in our republic. But I will say this. I do think Donald Trump is the most divisive figure in American politics in the history of our country. If I had a choice between Donald Trump and DeSantis, I'm voting for DeSantis. However, that's a fantasy. Because if you think DeSantis has a chance in the primaries against Donald Trump, you got another thing coming. Trump makes people, the left, so angry that it turns them into liars. They compromise everything they're about.
Yeah.
They will do whatever it takes to get that guy out because in their mind, he is a clear and
That's
present
scary.
Danger to the democracy of this country.
And the ends will justify the means.
That closing comment, as heard on Louder with Crowder, is completely misguided in the very way that I always warn about with regard to people who do not understand the binary polarity of left and right in politics. That kind of thinking is what causes the right to compromise its values. The left never compromises because it doesn't operate on any principles that can be compromised. Have you ever thought of that? Trump is the most divisive force. Well, I completely disagree that Trump is a divisive force. From what I've seen, he's a force for unity. He's uniting the people against the deep state. Trump makes the left so angry that it turns them into liars and they compromise everything they're about. Well, no. The left is built on lies. They don't need to be turned into liars, and they never compromise, which is why they stole the last election and why we're where we are today. All of their evils, they are projecting onto Trump. Those who want both the presumed left and right to, you know, just get along and work together are suffering from a bipolar political disorder. It's not possible. I don't want to unite or cooperate with any death cult ideology that seeks my death, the death of my children, family, and fellow members of society, my destruction, my slavery, the end of freedom. The death cult of the left is no more extreme today than it was at any time in history. Hello? But here's the reason that most people think that the divisiveness has become a recent, more polarized of late, you know? The reason it seemed that the left and right were getting along is because during that whole period of time, the left was winning on every front because the right failed to resist or fight back. They always, you know, go along to get along, compromising. And it was the right who compromised on the truth. The truth is always divisive. It exposes the liars and fraudsters and separates them from the honest people they would enslave. Those words define everything left. The reason that the left has so much disproportionate power and influence is that all of its resources have been stolen from others, especially the people they're persecuting, mainly through government. All of Big Pharma's fortunes were confiscated on their behalf by our governments, who in turn confiscate the wealth of us, their citizens. And this process basically defines everything left. And when the left loses its mind, it's for the same reason that we highlighted with the trans community going bonkers. They're utterly disconnected from reality. And their ideologies and words and definitions and policies are in utter conflict with reality. That's where the divide is. They're losing their minds because reality is what they are in conflict with. No, the great divide was always there and is always there and will always be there because the force of division, which politically we refer to as the left and the right, or morally as good and evil, or epistemologically as right and wrong, it is universal and eternal, at least in the context of human life. And just look at how the left media is incapable of defending its own views and bias. They accuse Trump of unleashing a virus of lies on Americans, as chilling as anything since January 6th. Oh my God. There's no sense in fact-checking. This is a lie. This is a lie. This is a lie. Wow. What's a lie? Name one. Merely saying that this is a lie is not a refutation, especially from those utterly in terror of ever having to have an actual debate on their issues or even facing someone with a different opinion. No sense in fact-checking? What? Well, that's a factual admission of factual impotence. In every sense of the word, these people are as unhinged as any of the crazy and mentally ill people that they continually use as their weapon against anything that is right and true. You know, it's long past the time that we treat the left with regard to its generic definition, meaning the past tense of leave. It's only when the left has left that we'll ever be able to live in a free society again. And personally, I think that Trump was being very kind when he said that our country is being destroyed by very stupid people, because he knows very well the country is being destroyed by evil people. And just in case you might think that I agree with everything that Trump says, not so. I objected to his saying that we're spending money like drunken sailors, because as everyone knows, drunken sailors spend their own money, not yours and mine. And just like a drunken sailor, you too can spend your own money by considering a donation to Just Right Media and or by spending your own time with us again when you join us next week as we continue our journey in the right direction. And until then, be right, stay right, do right, act right, think right, and be right back here. We'll see you then. To black and white under
Trump versus CNN, Insurrection 2, the rematch.
So last night, Donald Trump did a town hall on CNN. As for E. Jean Carroll, maybe he doesn't know her.
I don't know her. I never met her. I have no idea who she is. Her dog or her cat was named Vagina.
I'm guessing it was her cat. I mean, it makes more sense. Hey, Vagina, where did you get the dead mouse?